Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
You have either returned or ventured into, for the very first time, 3GT. This is Three Guys Theologizing. We want to welcome you to this episode of 3GT. This is Barry York, one of the co-hosts. I am the president of Reformed Presbyterian Theological Seminary down in Pittsburgh. And I am joined once again with my co-host, Scott Hunt, our parishioner and prosecuting attorney from Marion, Indiana. And we're glad that you have joined with us today. Well, we do have a professor, we do have the parishioner, but the pastor's still out on the loose. But never fear, because we have brought another pastor on with us. We are very glad to have with us today Dr. Matthew Everhard. He's the senior pastor of Gospel Fellowship, a Presbyterian church, a PCA congregation up north of Pittsburgh, in the Butler area, Valencia area there. And so, Matthew, welcome to 3GT.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me. Very glad to be here today.
Well, Scott, Matthew is a friend of mine a couple of years ago when he first... So what year did you come to Gospel Fellowship? I would guess, and I'm going to guess wrong, I'm sure.
Yeah, I came just over 2 years ago now. I just had my second anniversary.
Wow. See, I was going to guess longer than that. Seems like I've known you a long time. But we have known each other longer than that, because when Matthew came down, he was visiting RPTS, and we saw each other in the hallway, and we kind of did one of those, wait, I know you. And we realized we had taken a couple of Doctor of Ministry classes together down at RTS in Orlando. So it was fun catching back up with one another, and we've been spending time together since then. So I'm thankful for that. Matthew wrote and loves to study Jonathan Edwards. He did his project on Jonathan Edwards' view of joy. And he continues to write on Edwards. That's really why we have him on here today. But before we get right into the heart of his new book that's coming out, I did want to tell you, Matthew, you know, with Kyle gone, you know, our pastor slot's open. So if you could kind of consider this a tryout, you know, for this spot. So we'll have to see. We've been teasing.
That sounds Kyle. Good. I hope the pay structure it works out for me.
You won't get rich doing this job, but then again, you know, you're a prof as well, so they might decide to beat me off. Who knows? Scott,
we might just go with a whole new lineup.
Yeah, that's right.
New pastor, new professor.
That's right. Well, Matthew, we are glad you're on. Matthew has written several books. I know you do a YouTube channel where he does theological conversations and discussions on his channel. What's the name of your channel again, Matthew?
Yeah, the channel is just called Matthew Everhard, and just find it by searching my name. Also, just want to say, if you happen to be out in Western Pennsylvania and you live anywhere north of Pittsburgh, come worship with us sometime at Gospel Fellowship PCA. As Barry said, we're a Reformed, Bible-believing church. We love Christ. We're on a mission to share the gospel with the world. And if you're looking for a church like that, you found one, and come check us out, Gospel Fellowship PCA.
So there's the plug for Gospel
there's
Fellowship.
The plug.
My elders require me to do that, so I have to at least get in the invitation.
So Matthew is enjoying settling into that area with his wife. They have three children. But we're going to be talking about his book that's called Holy Living, that's coming out. And it is about Jonathan Edwards' resolutions. And I actually was asked by Matthew to write an endorsement. I'm just going to give you my endorsement, because that helps you to understand a little bit about what the book is about. I said this book has a great emphasis that's needed on sanctification in the modern church. It makes a superb contribution to this end. Matthew takes Edwards' famous 70 resolutions, helpfully categorizes them, and then brings them to lively understanding and application using Edwards' own life events and writings. And I go on to say, from now on, one will not want to have the resolutions in one hand without Matthew's book in the other. And I really think that's true, because as I read through this work, I was really encouraged just to see him using Edwards' life and biographical information and other writings to help us to understand what's behind the resolution. So I really want to get out of the way and let you do the talking, Matthew. So can you just tell us a little bit about what led you to write this particular book, and particularly some of the background to Edwards' resolution? I think some people could think he might have just sat down, you know, one New Year's Eve and wrote these out real quickly, but I think there's more to the story than that.
Well, I started studying Jonathan Edwards a number of years ago now, and to be completely honest, one of the reasons that I began my study of Edwards is that our doctoral supervisor at RTS Orlando, Steve Childers, he told us that we should pick a project to study for our dissertation that not only could captivate our attention for 3 to 4 years of study, but something that might actually change our lives, to the effect that when somebody does our funeral one day, they can legitimately say that this idea or this subject or this person literally changed that person's life. And so in my case, I was going through a period of tremendous stress in the ministry, stress at home when I was at work. I felt stressed about things at home when I was at home. I felt stressed about things at work. And I ended up picking Jonathan Edwards for my study focus because of his theology of joy and happiness, which is where I centered my doctoral studies for my dissertation. I did my first book on Edwards about his theology of joy and happiness, which he essentially roots in the Holy Trinity, in the relationship between the three persons of the Trinity, Father, Son, and Spirit. And so, like many people that study Edwards, I got into him through John Piper's work and recommendation to have a dead mentor in your life. And so feeling that that stress led me to want to study the concept of joy and happiness, which I did. And then more recently, I moved into a different area of study in Jonathan Edwards, which would be to focus in on what I call his early pastoral years. Now, for that, there's a period between 1722 and 1726 when Jonathan Edwards is really just a very young man. In fact, he begins to write the resolutions when he's only 19 years old. So when we read the resolutions, we should keep in mind that this is just a teenager who's actually writing his life goals. And yet when you read the 70 resolutions, it's obvious that you are dealing with a person that has an incredible intellect and a person who has clearly set a trajectory for what he wants his life to become. Now, Edwards, of course, had a pastor for a father, Timothy Edwards. He had a grandfather. His grandfather was a pastor, Solomon Stoddard. Mm-hmm. And so he knew what kind of a dignified and noble life he wanted to live for the glory of Christ. And so on December 18th of 1722, he sat down and he wrote probably the first 30 or so of the resolutions. And then he carried on writing resolutions until August 17th of the next year, 1723, until he had 70 total resolutions. And essentially, the resolutions capture what it is that Edwards wants to be as a person, as a Christian, and even as he sees himself becoming a pastor. So he writes in this early pastoral era of his life where he's really had three kind of trials in ministry, or he's about to. The first is that he served as an interim pastor in New York City for a congregation that had splintered and was fracturing. So he goes out to help make amends there. Secondly, he takes a very, very short call, if he even really showed up, at Bolton, Connecticut, the pulpit that his father had organized for him to take. But for some reason, that fell apart, and he never really became their pastor. And then third, he becomes the tutor at Yale, where he had already done his undergraduate work and was working towards his master's degree. So the resolutions are really quite stunning because they show a mind and a heart that is clearly in love with Christ and trying to pursue sanctification. So that's kind of a general background about the composition of the resolutions.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Chris, in our modern era, when we hear the word resolution, I joked a little bit about New Year's Eve. Of course, that's when a lot of people make these types of resolutions. What would you say distinguishes what Edwards did from our modern concept of a resolution?
Well, for one thing, Edwards did not invent the genre. So the writing of resolutions was something that dignified people did from time to time. And the fact that Edwards actually wrote resolutions for himself indicates that he sees himself as aspiring to be a person of influence. And we know that even from some of his writings in this era, he's talking about his future. He wants to publish in England and things like this. But other stately people wrote sets of resolutions. In fact, one of the interesting things that we can do is compare Edwards' resolutions to two people that lived in his approximate time frame, which would be Benjamin Franklin on one hand and George Washington, our first president, on the other. It's very interesting to make this comparison because Benjamin Franklin's resolutions are short. They're pithy, as are Edwards'. And there's only a dozen or so of them. And Benjamin Franklin's resolutions focus on things like frugality, simplicity, even chastity. Whereas George Washington has over 100 resolutions. And from the best I can tell, Washington may have borrowed some of those resolutions from other published sets of resolutions, because there seems to be some overlap with other people that are contemporaneous. But Washington's are almost humorous at some points, because he says things that would be very important for a general in the military to think about. For instance, he says he should never be in a various stages of undress before his soldiers that are ranked below him, that he should never warm his feet in the fire in front of his soldiers, especially if somebody else is cooking meat on the same fire. He should never spit into the fire, as probably many of the soldiers did. And so Washington's resolutions are very interesting, if not humorous, because they're the kinds of things that a ranking military man might have to keep in mind when being in the presence of his lesser colleagues. Edwards, of course, are almost entirely focused on Christian spirituality, and thus the title of the book that I just recently completed, Holy Living. Edwards has a desire to pursue sanctification. And if I'm completely honest, that also brings about maybe one of the weaknesses of Edwards's resolutions is that they do, in some sense, rely on oneself. He begins every single one almost without fail with the word resolved. And then he endeavors to do something or to be something. And so, you know, one of the things that we say is that Edwards really is trying to strike a balance here between volitionally becoming the kind of person that he wants to be, and yet also relying on the Holy Spirit to do the work of sanctification in his life. And it's not entirely clear that he got that balance right.
Mm-hmm. I think what further differentiates it from the modern concept is so often the resolutions we hear of are more on a physical plane. You know, I'm going to go to the gym or those types of things are usually short term. Whereas when you read Edwards, you're really sensing here's one who's pursuing holiness, without which one will not see the Lord. He's really got eternity in his mind so much as he works on these. Would you agree, Matthew, they're like spiritual life goals would be a good equivalent to what he means by a resolution?
Yeah. When I did my study on the 70 resolutions, I was able to identify three basic categories of resolutions, which I think are helpful to understand the whole set. And so with some alliteration here, you'll notice the repetition of the letter E. But the first kind of resolution that he writes is what I call his existential resolutions, which is to say, what he views his purpose of being, why is he here? What is the point of human existence? In this sense, we might think of the philosopher's quest to discover the meaning of life. And Edwards, of course, gets this exactly right because he realizes that the purpose of human life is to live for the glory of God. And we almost hear some catechetical language in some of the ways that he does these resolutions. We might think, for instance, of Westminster Shorter Catechism number 1, what is the chief end of man? To glorify God and to enjoy him forever. We certainly hear glimmers of Shorter number 1 throughout several of the resolutions. We think also of the Heidelberg Catechism, number one, which talks about our life and our death entirely belonging to Christ. So in terms of this first category, his existential resolutions, he's thinking about, you know, why am I made? What is my purpose as a creature? Why do I bear the image of God? And so he concludes, and this is brilliant, by the way, for a 19-year-old to realize that life has no meaning other than that we live to glorify God with heart, soul, mind, and strength, as Christ teaches us. The second category of resolution that I identified is what we might call the ethical resolutions. And here, Edwards is primarily thinking of his duty with relationship to other people. There is a subtext happening here as Edwards writes the resolutions that he's concerned about some of his relationships, especially relationships with his parents. And we know that because the resolutions as it documents has kind of a symbiotic relationship with another one of his personal documents called his diary, where he expands on some of his spiritual strivings and some of his spiritual experiences, both his highs and his lows. And so you can compare the resolutions in the diary because he co-dates these two documents, referring the one mutually to the other. And so you can sort of see what's happening in his life as you look at the diary on the very dates that he writes particular resolutions. So he's concerned ethically with his outward comportment, his demeanor, especially giving honor to whom honor is due. And then the third category that I identified is what we might call his eschatological resolutions. So existential, ethical, and then his eschatological resolutions. And these are those that pertain to thoughts of death, thoughts of heaven, and thoughts of hell. And again, I do think this is showing maturity beyond his years, that Edwards is already thinking about the beauty and the brevity of life. A number of them contemplates things that we might think of being morbid. He says in one place that he should think often of the time and circumstances of his own death. And so Edwards is already preparing to die in one sense. He knows that life is short. And so while he is alive, he wants to fully live for the glory of God as much as it is humanly possible to do so.
Really quick, I have a quick question. I don't mean to interrupt, but so you've kind of separated these into three categories, if you will. Do you think that the modern reader of these resolutions should read them as a sum total or individual parts? How do they interrelate with each other? You know, you have the existential and the ethical, eschatological. Is there some bleed over in these? How are we to read these and understand what Edwards had in mind?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's a number of ways that you could read them. One thing that you could do is just simply read them in order from number one to 70. It's apparent that he wrote the first 30 or so at the same time, because his earliest biographers who had the original manuscripts tells us that his handwriting and even the ink that he was using is the same. Now, in those days, of course, they used the inkwell with the feather. And so you made your own ink. And so it's interesting, in Edwards studies, you can actually date some of his writings by what jar of ink he was using. But then after that, he begins to pen them a few at a time, dating them to what he's experiencing at the time. And so again, it's probably very helpful to have the diary with you so that you can compare the diary to the resolutions. So that'd be one way you could just sit down and just read them chronologically. That's not the approach that I took in my book, though. Instead, I broke them into those broader categories because in my thinking, it was easier to see the set as a whole if you understand some of the overlapping themes between the various resolutions. But you're right, there's definitely bleed over between those in various categories. It's not that he intended to make those three categories, but those are three categories that I identified that help us to see them as a whole set.
Well, and going back to just this idea of him as such a young man thinking about dying soon, that is a characteristic really that took place, you know, later on in his life during the Great Awakening. A lot of young people just coming to grips with eternity, that they're only here for a brief time. And it's amazing to read some of the accounts of that. And then you compare that to our own day and age, where young people are just so vapid and They're just thinking about the temporary, the here and now, the quick and easy on social media. I think this is the type of thing that we need to help our, especially this rising generation. All of us need this, of course, but particularly our young people, this coming generation needs to get gripped with the things that were gripping Edwards very much so. I wondered, Matthew, if you would be willing to just share a few of the resolutions that are like some of your favorites. I know you're immersed in these, and even like share with us a little bit of the approach you took in addressing that in your book, because I found it's very devotional the way that you treated it, experiential. I was thankful for that, but it's also theological. So I'd like you just to just treat one or two of them, Harry. If you want to read your book, you can, but if you just want to speak it, that's fine as well.
Yeah, let me read a couple of them to you in just a moment, but I do want to set this up in the context of Edwards' own experience, because it's apparent that Edwards at some point he abandoned the use of the resolutions entirely. So originally, when we read his diary, Edwards was determined to actually compare his life to the resolutions in some sort of a mathematical way. In other words, he says in one place that he's going to actually take note on how many times he fails in these particular resolutions. And he's going to compare his life to this document that he makes for himself using some sort of tally mark system or something like this. And he's going to review the resolutions weekly and then monthly and then yearly as well. And so his original goal was that he could actually track his sanctification progress. Now, what becomes more and more apparent as he tries to do this, as we read the diary, is that he's more and more frustrated with himself and his inability to actually carry out what he's designed to do in the resolutions. And so after only trying this for several months, he abandons the resolutions. I don't know that he set them aside forever, but he stops referring to them in his diary. Now, his diary will continue on for several months and even several years, although even that he's going to wane in his frequency in writing in the diary. And there's a number of suggestions as why this happened for Edwards. One suggestion is that, well, he wrote 70, and that's just a big, round, perfectly biblical number. And so he viewed the canon as essentially complete. He had figured out who he wants to be, and now he's just going to go for it. I'm actually more inclined to think that it's this frustration of trying to be something that cannot become without the work of the indwelling power of the Holy Spirit. Whereas Edwards matures in his faith, he actually stops being so morbidly introspective and he begins to focus more on his calling. He gets married, he has children, he becomes the pastor of the Northampton Church, and life gets busy. And for most of the rest of Edwards' mature ministry, he stops examining himself so rigorously. In fact, the next time that he really even talks about himself in his own writings is in 1740, when he goes back and writes his personal narrative. Now, he does describe these younger years as being the peak of his spiritual fervency, but he also says something really important here in the personal narrative, that he depended too much upon himself in his younger years. So I just want to throw that out there as a proper balance, I think, because Edwards himself realized that this project is not going to be sufficient in and of itself to mature as a Christian believer.
Matthew, it's interesting you anticipated one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because as you look at his resolution, that's what some people would criticize them for, is there is a morbidity to him. I had that down here. Resolution 7, resolve never to do anything which I should be afraid to do if it were the last hour of my life. Number 41, resolve to ask myself at the end of every day, week, month, and year, wherein I could possibly in any respect have done better. So if you put that kind of pressure on yourself over time, it could be very wearying. And it's interesting you say that. The one question I wanted to ask you, just in light of that, because the practicality of all of this, is, do you think that's a common experience just in the Christian life, that, you know, you start off with a lot of zeal as a young person and maybe put a lot of pressure on yourself, and then you start maturing and realizing, Well, it wasn't that that was bad. Those boundaries, parameters, goals weren't bad, but I need to be careful to not rely on self, but just start looking and relying more on the Lord.
Hmm. Yeah, and absolutely. And I think one of the reasons why I connect so deeply with Edwards in much of what he writes is that we probably struggle with the same spiritual malady, mm-hmm. which is that I too am prone to self-justification in that sense. Now, Edwards understood the doctrine of justification by faith alone. That's what he wrote his master's thesis on in Latin. So he understood the doctrine of justification, and it's one thing for us to understand that God has imputed to us the righteousness of Christ by grace through faith alone. And yet, especially for those of us who labor in the ministry, there is this creeping sense in which we need to self-justify by our performance-related abilities, whether that would be our devotional activities or our evangelistic zeal or our ability to pray without breaking concentration. Let me speak personally here. I put a lot of pressure on myself to perform in those ways. And so maybe that's one of the reasons why I gravitate towards the resolutions. But I try in the book to caution the reader that this is not a fully orbed systematic theology here. We need heavy doses of grace, and we need sanctification through the ordinary means of grace as well. And I know Edwards wouldn't dispute that. But in this particular document, if this is all you had from Jonathan Edwards, and you might certainly think that he is a performance-oriented spiritual rigorist, and in that sense, there would be some imbalance. Now, I do want to share a couple of the resolutions that are my favorite, and I like this document for a reason, because many of these resolutions do come across as very fresh and very tangible and very powerful. And so probably my favorite resolution of all is number 6, which simply says, resolved to live with all of my might while I do live. And I love that one because it actually does capture something of the brevity of life, as many of the other resolutions do. Notice he says, while I do live, which of course implies that there will be a terminus, there will be an end, there will be a point at which death becomes us all. But while I do have my life, I'm going to live with all of my might. And I most certainly prefer that to the kind of passive personality, which has, you know, very little zeal, very little motive. After all, it was Christ that did tell us that we are to love God with heart, mind, soul, and strength. And I think Edwards is trying to acknowledge this. And so resolution 6, I think it's brilliant. I think it's beautiful and succinct.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there another one that you have that you'd like to share? And maybe
here's
a little taste 18. Of how you treated it as well in your book.
Hmm. Yeah, in the book, I try to give a little bit of biblical balance, a little bit of scriptural background, and then some devotional thoughts and applications to these two. Resolution 18, he says, resolved to live so as at all times, as I think best in my devout frames, and when I have the clearest notions of things of the gospel and another world. There are several that are parallel to this one, this idea of living with a clear view to eternity. One of the other resolutions says that he wants to live as if he had seen the glories of heaven and the terrors of hell. And there's a sense that that could be a morbid one too. But I personally find that to be a very captivating thought. How would my life be different if I had actually tasted the glories of heaven, even just for a moment? If I could look upon the beatific vision described in Revelation and see God in his full brightness and his glory and his resplendence, how would that amplify my worship? How would that inform my evangelism? And conversely, if I could smell the brimstone and if I could hear the screams of the damned, would that change the way I approach preaching? Would that change the way I approach evangelism? So Edwards is resolving here that he wants to live now, even in this world, as though he fully understands and appreciates the eternality of the world to come, both in heaven and in hell.
Mm-hmm. That's very insightful and helpful. In your book, treat it devotionally. And why don't you just give us a little taste of that? So let's say you treated Resolution 18 in your book. What do you try to get the reader to do in response as they're reading? Are you trying to get readers to write their own resolutions, or are you trying to use these as meditations to, as your title implies, more holy living in the day? How are you expecting the reader to interact with your book?
Well, I do hope it's devotional, and I do hope that it's historical, and I do hope that's theological, and that's asking a lot for one particular book. But I think what's interesting about looking back at some of these characters, historical figures from a different time, is that their priorities are sometimes obviously different from ours. And let me give you a good example of that. In resolution number 38, Edwards says something that I don't think many modern day evangelicals would think to say. He says, "Resolve never to speak anything that is ridiculous or a matter of laughter on the Lord's Day." And he did write that on Sabbath day of December 23rd, 1722. So he vows not to laugh on the Lord's Day. Now, you know, you have to wonder what it is that prompted him to write that as a resolution. Is it possible that Edwards caught himself being far too sportive or far too superficial on the Lord's Day? Did he get caught up in a conversation with some of his peers, other teenagers, and he found himself acting a little bit too ridiculous, is the word he chooses here? Or I can almost imagine it happening this way, that Edwards is in church and he himself is being solemn and sincere, trying to prepare himself for worship, while he sees his peers perhaps across the sanctuary who are mocking and breaking out into laughter or some sort of controlled chuckling during the worship service, and Edwards would have despised that. But one of the reasons that's such an interesting resolution is that we just don't tend to think about the Lord's Day in those terms. And personally, I think that's a wake-up call to sanctifying the day. And while you and I, perhaps, we may come from theological traditions that do emphasize the Sabbath rest of the Lord's Day, certainly across the broader swath of evangelicalism, there are many people and traditions that don't emphasize any difference of the Lord's Day at all. And so the fact that he would think of this to say that he's not even going to laugh, not even going to joke, not even going to snicker on the Lord's Day, it says something about the priorities that are different in his time than in ours. So I try to highlight some of those things for the reader.
That's very helpful. I can recall times where we've in ministry had to talk to the youth and remind them it is the Lord's Day. And I just remember a period where it seemed like every fellowship lunch, the kids were just talking about the movies they were watching and the sporting events and all those things. And they weren't really using the Lord's Day and coming alongside, not in a condemning way, but just challenging them to think, you know, as you're influenced by people like Edwards to do so, is helpful to really check your life and make sure that you are using the day the way the Lord has designed for it to be used. But yes, that's very helpful. Anything else you'd like to just share about the book, Matthew, as we're kind of coming to the end here? So anything else you'd like to tell the listeners about it?
Well, I'm not sure that I would recommend necessarily that readers go out and write their own resolutions. But if they were to try to do something like that, I would hope that they would be able to capture something of that proper balance between, on one hand, a true and real desire to aspire towards holy living, as the title suggests, and on the other hand, an entire reliance on the Holy Spirit's sanctifying work. He is the one, of course, who actually does the work of sanctifying his people. And for that, we can be very grateful. I've continued to enjoy my study in Jonathan Edwards. And for those of you out there listening to the podcast, if you don't have a dead mentor, I do think it's a wonderful thing to pick one particular person, perhaps several, but at least one person that you can really mine into the depths and the treasures of some of their great writings over time. I do love Jonathan Edwards because there's just so much there, sermons and treatises and personal writings and major works and minor works. One can truly exhaust themselves in the many volumes of Jonathan Edwards without ever coming to the end. But I'm challenged by him. I'm refreshed by him, and I am thankful for his gospel witness. And I do pray that the Lord would raise up a revival such as that Jonathan Edwards experienced in his own time. Of course, Edwards was one of the very central figures in the Great Awakening of 1740 to 1742. And that's our longing, isn't it? That God would awaken his churches and that people would come to Christ in great volume and that preachers would expound the word of God and the gospel of grace fully and with great zeal, as did Edwards and Whitfield and others.
One of the things you're making me think of too, Matthew, you just share about him, is how, you know, we're living in a day where identity is the big buzzword. Everybody's trying to self-identify. And you really see in Edwards that he's finding all of his identity in Christ. And it just reminds me of Calvin, how he says, you know, if we want to know God better, one of the ways that we really get to know God better is starting to learn about ourselves, because we're made in his image. And as we learn about ourselves, we learn more about God and vice versa. And so it's not there are parts that can be morbid introspection, but there is a very legitimate way that we are to be very mindful of who we are in Christ and what he expects of us, and to be examining our lives. And I think the resolutions, particularly as you've laid it out for the reader, I think it's a helpful exercise as you dig into Edwards, as you're talking about a little bit in this score, you start thinking about your own life and your own standing and your own relationship with God. And that's a very helpful and healthy thing to be doing. Well, I know your book is, we were hoping this podcast was coming out as the book itself in printed form is coming out. And I sort of groaned and laughed with you a little bit. I think it was last week when you said, here's a picture of the shipment of my books, and there's a cargo ship outside a bay in Los Angeles. I think you're still not seeing it in printed form because of the paper supply. But we did just check before this podcast began, and it is available on Kindle. And at least right now, it's at there's a bargain on it. So people can pick it up that way. We're not able to offer one. Sometimes we do that when we interview authors. We're not able to do that at this time, but maybe in the future, once it's printed, we can offer a copy or two to our listeners. And we really do want to encourage people to buy the book and read it. I think it will be to your great benefit. Anything else, guys? Scott, any more? You want to ask him a lawyer-like question to see if he can stump him or something?
I don't think I'm going to stump him. And he answered most of the questions that I was having in my mind. So I appreciate the fact that you came on today and shared with us and answered all my questions without even having to ask them. So that was brilliant. Well done. I appreciate it.
Well, guys, thank you so much for having me on the show. I do apologize that we can't give away a free book, but I'll tell you what, next time I come on, if there is a next time, we'll give away two books to make up for the loss for today. How's that?
There you go. And again, you may end up being one of the co-hosts. We just don't know how this is all going to work out. So we'll see. Well, this particular podcast is sponsored by a conference that's going on at your church here in just a few weeks. Do you want to tell a little bit about that, Matthew?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Hey, if you're anywhere in Western Pennsylvania, Gospel Fellowship PCA, we're hosting a conference called The Pursuit of Christ, and we are going to have an incredible lineup of speakers, including two of the guys on this particular podcast. Dr. Barry York is going to come, and he's going to speak to us, as well as yours truly. But we have several amazing guys, and if you're familiar with the ministry of the Reformed Presbyterian Theological Seminary, RPTS. You already know some of the speakers. We're going to have Keith Evans is going to come, and he's going to talk about a Reformed view of demonology, which is very interesting. Jeff Stuyvesant, who's the professor of New Testament, is going to talk about one of the great books of all time in Pilgrim's Progress. And David Whitla, who's the history professor, you're going to want to be there just to hear his accent, which, you know, if you have an accent, you're just like 10% smarter automatically. So that's worth the price of admission, which is zero. It's a totally free conference. All you have to do is show up. And again, just Google us, Gospel Fellowship PCA. We're right here in Valencia, Pennsylvania. The date of the conference is Friday night, November 12th, and Saturday morning, November 13th. So just come show up. We have plenty of room for you, and we'll have some snacks and coffee as well.
Well, thank you for that, Matthew. And we are glad that you've listened to this episode of Three Guys Theologizing. We always love to hear from you. So if you'd like to write in and comment on this particular episode or give us ideas for future ones, send us an email at 3gt.xyz@gmail.com. Go over to our website at 3gt.xyz, where you can find out more about this podcast. Thanks for listening.